We don't teach queer history in K through 12 or even in higher ed unless you're specifically looking for it.
Tanya D. Zook of the University of North Texas.
A lot of stuff has been purposely deleted, where we have histories and archives that during various purges, we'll go with that, have been destroyed. So I know that is something that is actually a concern right now with our own geopolitical situation here in the U.S.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Queer Catholics waiting to see about Holy See, mass discharges of trans troops cleared by top U.S. court, and This Way Out's audio archives gets indexing facelift. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 10th, 2025. Most queer Catholic groups are greeting the Roman Church's new Pope, Leo XIV, with cautious optimism. The former Cardinal Robert Prevost has a questionable record on LGBTQ issues, so they're putting a lot of faith in Leo's first words as Pope. Peace be with you. We have to seek together to be a missionary church, a church that builds bridges and dialogue. There's not a lot to go on. Born in Chicago, he's the first U.S.-born pontiff in the church's history. He spent 2 decades as a bishop in Peru and is fluent in 5 languages. At 69, he's relatively young to begin a papacy. What little is known about Leo's position on LGBTQ people is disturbing. Where his predecessor, Pope Francis, famously said, "Who am I to judge?" Bishop Prevost denounced the entertainment industry at a gathering of bishops in 2012. He charged the media with harboring sympathy for beliefs and practices that are at odds with the gospel, like the homosexual lifestyle and alternative families comprised of same-sex partners and their adopted children, according to a report in the New York Times. In Peru, Prevost spoke out against gender teachings in schools, telling local news, "The promotion of gender ideology is confusing because it seeks to create genders that don't exist." Nevertheless, the global network of Rainbow Catholics expressed hope that opinions and ideas can change. Likewise, Dignity USA's statement read in part, "We pray that Pope Leo XIV will demonstrate a willingness to listen and grow as he begins his new role as the leader of the global church." New Ways Ministry Executive Director Francis DiBernardo hopes that Leo will further educate himself by meeting with and listening to LGBTQ+ Catholics and their supporters. Outreach Catholic Executive Director Michael O'Loughlin is more optimistic. He told The Advocate, "From his choice of name honoring a pope committed to justice to his call for a church focused on peace and dialogue, early signs show that Pope Leo XIV hopes to continue the pastoral outreach of Pope Francis. While we do not yet know how the new pope will interact with LGBT Catholics, the same was true in 2013 on the night Pope Francis was elected, and his pontificate wound up being inspiring to so many in our community."
The U.S. Supreme Court is allowing the Trump administration's wholesale discharge of transgender service members to go forward. Along ideological lines on May 6th, the 6-3 majority lifted the lower court's injunctions to let the policy be enforced even while its constitutionality is argued. There was strong dissent from the minority liberal justices Elena Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson, and Sonia Sotomayor. Trump's presidential Executive Order 14183 requires the discharge of all trans service members regardless of their honorable records. Future enlistments are forbidden. Demonstrably incompetent Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is its gleeful enforcer. In a speech at the Special Operations Forces Week 2025 in Tampa, Florida this week, the breadth of Hegseth's animus was on full display.
We are leaving wokeness and weakness behind. No more pronouns, no more climate change obsession, no more emergency vaccine mandates, no more dudes in dresses. We're done with that.
Hegseth's May 8th ultimatum to all transgender service members read, in accordance with the policy now reinstated, service members who have a current diagnosis or history of or exhibit symptoms consistent with gender dysphoria may elect to separate voluntarily. There's a timeline here, and eventually involuntarily, if necessary. The Secretary's specific directive explained the rules, ironically, going into effect as of Pride Month. The eligibility window to self-identify for voluntary separation is extended to June 6, 2025, for active component service members, and July 7, 2025, for reserve component service members. After that, involuntary separation processes will begin for those who've not yet resigned. Transgender people in the U.S. Armed Services have been on a real roller coaster ride. Trump banned trans troops during his first administration. Then President Joe Biden lifted it. Now, they're at least temporarily banned again. Second Lieutenant Nick Talbot of the U.S. Army Reserve is a lead plaintiff in one of the lawsuits challenging the trans military ban. He used his uniform as a symbol of his courageous stand during an interview with CNN.
I do remember kind of putting this on for the first time, and I was starting to think I was never going to get to wear this, and here I am. And especially now, you know, getting to be a lieutenant and getting to wear my rank, I worked really hard for this. I think that it's just absolutely ridiculous to insinuate that trans folks and trans service members are, you know, going home and trying to pretend to be something that we're not.
Colonel Bree Fram has spent more than two decades in the service, the last 4 years in the U.S. Space Force. She was defiant on Baltimore, Maryland TV station WJZ.
I know at my core what I stand for, and I believe in the ideals of America and the oath that I swore to defend. When that ruling came out, I and thousands of other transgender service members were doing the jobs and the missions that the military has assigned to us. I've served over 22 years in uniform, and if there's one thing I can guarantee, that whether it is in uniform or not, my time of service is not done.
Maine's Democratic Governor Janet Mills got the last laugh this week when the U.S. Department of Agriculture backed down from its threats to defund the state's school lunches program. Mills' confrontation with Donald Trump over her state's laws protecting transgender female athletes went viral in mid-February.
Is Maine here, the governor of Maine?
Yeah, huh? I'm here.
Are you not going to comply with it?
I'm complying with state and federal laws.
We are the federal law. So you better comply, because otherwise you're not getting any federal funding.
See you in court.
Well, I did see him in court.
Governor Mills delivered the follow-up at a May 9 press conference.
And on May 2nd, just 1 month after the USDA's letter, the USDA has backed down and they have agreed to stop freezing funds for the school lunch program that feeds 172,000 kids in Maine. And it's good to feel a victory like this. We took him to court, and we won.
Finally, it was Shades of Stonewall at Pittsburgh's venerable P-Town Bar on May 2nd. More than a dozen members of the Pennsylvania State Police and other officers stormed the venue in the middle of another Party Pittsburgh drag show. The Raiders held off for a full-length rendition of Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody before ordering patrons and performers out for half an hour while they conducted what they called a compliance check. The issue was apparently overcrowding. However, a statement from Mayor Ed Gainey verified that the bar had undergone renovations during the COVID lockdown and that the owners were waiting for an updated permit from the city. That revision would have accommodated the crowd size that night. Well-known trans model and performance artist Amanda Lepore was a guest performer. It was widely reported that some officers asked her to take a selfie with them as she waited outside with the other queens and patrons. Drag queen extraordinaire Indica was the evening's host. She led fellow performers and close to 100 patrons in an a cappella sing-along of Chapel Round's Pink Pony Club while waiting outside in the rain. As Kuberg commented, "Despite the interruption, the night became a moment of resistance, solidarity, and improvisational beauty. It reminded everyone there that drag isn't just entertainment, it's political. And when the music stops, the queens don't. They just take the stage wherever they need to, even if it's in the street."
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending May 10th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Making history, and there's making history. First, the people and movements that change the course of events make history. Then historians make history out of whatever documentation is hopefully recorded at the time of those events and hopefully preserved. If that documentation vanishes, either by accident or by design, the work of future historians will be skewed. This Way Out has been recording LGBTQ events as they happened since 1988, and the complete collection of programs has now been archived online. That's only the beginning. Overnight Productions CEO and NewsWrap producer Brian DeShazer is the driving force behind the preservation project. He talks with one of his co-conspirators about the next steps to turn the collection into a useful research tool before the shifting political climate makes such resources disappear.
Hi, Tanya DeZook, and welcome to This Way Out.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. So let's get talking about our This Way Out collection that has been preserved by the American Archive of Public Broadcasting, which is a collaboration between the Library of Congress and GBH. We've been working on this project for 5 years now, and thanks to the American Archive, they were digitized. And now the back end of that story is what to do with all the metadata cataloging and what is the future of an archive like this. So Tanya, tell me about how you became involved with the project and what you've accomplished.
I'm working on helping you with the back end database stuff. My intern, Kelsey, and I worked on confirming all of the metadata and the dates were all correct for all of the files and the transcriptions are done.
Can you explain a little bit more what that means? So we're working from an audio resource. AI generated a basic transcription of everything. And then what do we do with it?
So once we have the basic transcription of the tapes, we're taking a different AI set. The AI will scrub through the transcripts and find the locations that have been mentioned in all of the episodes and their time codes when they're mentioned, and create a new data set for us. And that data set will allow us to have every location that's mentioned, particularly in the NewsWrap segment, but even in the longer form interviews and like news coverage,
when a location has been mentioned. So eventually, all that metadata will be put into a table where we can then pull on a user graphic interface a map. And so eventually, for the users, we will have a global map of every news mention in This Way Out, all of those locations. So you could click on a location on the map, and it will pull up a list of all the episodes that mention that location in chronological order. So you can sort of see the history of queer events globally and listen to the reportage of those locations in chronological order. And that would be an amazing ability for researchers and students to be able to physically interface with the database in a way that is geospecific. And people can sort of get a history and scope of what This Way Out has covered over the years, because it's all over the world.
So as a researcher in the classroom, what does that mean in terms of what students in the future might use as a PhD, a grant project that they would be working on? What do you think it could do?
Well, it allows students to see global networks more clearly in terms of how what happens in one country or one region then affects or inspires other countries and regions. You can find support networks that are happening globally, as well as on a more local context. And in terms of like future grant writing, there's ways of then utilizing that for historical, but also for future planning, right? What was successful historically speaking, now that we can see on a big picture, how can we replicate that to continue to move forward?
No, and also what's interesting, Tanya, is the very existence of queer history and its struggle to preserve it. You know, those human beings like us who can identify a collection, get it preserved, and put the energies to have it actually exist. But the future of the collection and the usability of the collection is impressing me. And when you talk about this global networking and being able to see it visually through the audio of This Way Out, what currently exists that can do that very thing? That is there a resource that somebody can and ask and answer those questions on the global network other than what we're trying to present now?
I actually can't think of one. What are the problems that we have in terms of archival? Several problems that we have going on in archival is that each nation state sort of does their own archival system, and it's generally proprietary. And so it is rare to see an organization that covered news globally when it comes to queer LGBTQ plus issues. And so getting access to that data is difficult to then make a global network. So we do have national like archives and libraries, even here in the US, but they are generally geospecific. The other issue is that a lot of stuff has been purposely deleted, right? Where we have histories and archives that during various purges, we'll go with that, have been destroyed. So I know that is something that is actually a concern right now with our own geopolitical situation here in the US. And one of the reasons why going digital is so necessary. What is great about this project is that we have copies of this digital archive hosted in several locations in the hopes that if one gets shut down, the whole project remains.
So we also need to thank David Soibert at the University of California, Santa Barbara, who's taking the master tapes of the collection for permanent storage, but is also ingesting the digital collection for access. And you're going to be helping us making an interface to our website for yet another interface and a way for people to find us and do research in a different user way. Like each of those institutions has a particular way to do research of how their database is set up. But with This Way Out's website, we could make it our own and make it user-friendly as towards our audience rather than an academic researcher. The existence of our queer history and those purges that you talked about We also have to talk about family purging personal histories because of shame. The vast amount of history, particularly through the AIDS crisis, is just gone. So what we do have in terms of This Way Out's history is incredible piece of evidence of our time through the AIDS crisis, which is still not over. You are listening to Tanya D. Zook, who has a PhD in moving images and lectures at the University of North Texas College of Liberal Arts and Social Sciences in media industries and audiences. She is also the faculty advisor to the Queer Cinema Club on campus. In terms of the Radio Preservation Task Force, like, we got together in the Gender and Sexuality Caucus, yeah, of a national collection of academics and scholars and researchers, but also archivists that are putting the stuff together. Now I'm wondering about, you know, those academics and the people that teach media studies and queer studies and feminist studies. How do you think that they'll be able to use this collection?
This is such a big question right now. I think one of the best things that we have going forward for this project is that it, because it is utilizing so many different resources and systems, that it will be available to the open public. I know right now in academia, pretty much everything that we study and that women, gender, sexuality section of things, and if we get intersectionality involved when it comes to race and ethnicity, all of that is verboten right now for funding. all of those words are stricken. So the fact that it is, in fact, open source and would be available to anybody is a huge thing for freedom of academic and scholarly pursuits. In terms of how we utilize the database and, like, the archive that is This Way Out, it allows us to see slice of life. It allows us to see the change of political movements. I can certainly see people going through and doing location-bound, doing thematic research. So whether it's on the AIDS crisis, whether it's on changing legislation, which is constantly covered within This Way Out, or even my personal project that I want to do is looking at the response music from the wrap-up. Every wrap-up has that response music. I find that fascinating and would love to do a study there. It allows for that kind of coding to happen as we look through themes. And hopefully at some point we can also do other interfaces that go along themes as well. Once we have the database set up, there will be a lot of options for how we can then filter that data or provide filters for scholars.
That's really exciting. I also wanted to talk, we were talking about the transcripts, and now that the transcripts are up, the American Archive of Public Broadcasting has added the collection to what's called their Fix-It Plus site, which allows crowdsourcing to do the transcription correction. The dream of mine is for publication. So those researchers to come up with, you know, the evolution of the AIDS reporting, that does deserve to be in an academic book, you know, a scholarly book, as well as the entertainment interviews of who have we interviewed and why and who were they. And as you know, particularly queer history comes and goes. There are people still that come out every day that have not yet opened this up to what was Stonewall. So we still are teaching Stonewall every year during Pride Month, because there are so many people that come out that haven't had access or interest into that history.
Well, and we don't teach queer history in K-12 or even in higher ed unless you're specifically looking for it.
It's going to get harder and harder and harder because now it's verboten.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't pass yet. It was up for curriculum review oversight, state oversight of curriculum, even in higher ed, and all of the DEI language was going to have to get shunted, and several of our classes were going to be closed. It didn't pass. We're very grateful. We're very thankful that they didn't pass. But it is something that is very much on our mind of, like, how do we preserve or even teach these concepts or these histories without being censored? One of those ways is by presenting it as history and then sort of leaving the DEI out of it all.
Like, how about you personally, having listened to some of This Way Out, when you were introduced to This Way Out, what was your reaction?
To be honest, I was shocked that it had been around for so long. I was like 40 years old, and I had never heard a queer radio program. I grew up in a very rural area, in a very conservative household, and did not know that that content existed. Now, with the internet and online distribution, my niece has access to that, and she's 4 hours from the nearest city. And that is, to me, amazing that she can listen to This Way Out and have access to that history and to that community. It's something rare to have that connection, especially when we get cut off from family and from larger society, that there is these threads that still exist and can climb back. And see that we're not alone, and we've never been alone. And so rarely do we see that in mainstream culture and in mainstream traditional education. As a teacher, as someone who, that's what I do, I'm not as much of a researcher as I am an educator. Being able to provide links out to resources, particularly to my queer students, of which are particularly under attack right now here in Texas, and giving them that sense of history can be a lifesaver for a lot of these students. And so this project means a lot to me.
Well, thanks, Tanya. I really appreciate it. And I also want to shout out to Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle and the board of directors of this organization who produce and distribute this program for free to radio stations. So there is no money required for a radio station to air it from the very beginning. And with that, crossing over to the free access of the collection for researchers, and just as you said, for anybody who's able to find us on the internet or through their public radio station. We thank you for joining us, Tanya, and thank you for all the work that you've done. Tanya DeZook of the University of North Texas, we appreciate you. And we'll be talking more about the geographic transcription thingy. All right, Tanya, have a great day.
You too.
Thanks to Keith Brown and Gay Spirit Radio for lending us cassette copies of the collection for digitization. You can search This Way Out collection and listen to any of the 1,755 historic programs at AmericanArchive.org. For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by John Dyer V and Tanya Kane Perry, and produced by Brian DeShazer, who was also this week's correspondent. The Stylistics and Billy Joel performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks James Kennedy of Dayton, Ohio, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KICI Iowa City, Iowa, CHMA Sackville, New Brunswick, WESU Middletown, Connecticut, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.